Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, it's Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast. It's Friday, June 17th. If you didn't listen to the January 6th committee hearing yesterday, we've got a few choice clips from it, and we'll try to add yesterday's pieces to the larger storyline that the evidence is creating. And I'll start here to frame how that big picture looks to me, and that is that January 6th was even worse than you probably thought. Why? Well, almost everyone close to then-President Trump told him his stolen election claims and plan to block certification on January 6th were whack. Bill Barr, Jared and Ivanka, his White House counsel, Pat Cipollone, his campaign manager, Bill Stepien, his vice president, Mike Pence, as we heard a lot about yesterday, and on and on. Trump's side also lost 60 cases in court, 60, between Election Day and January 6th, cases that were designed to stop various states from submitting their electors. But Trump went lawyer shopping until he could find a couple who would push this crazy stuff on his behalf anyway. He found Rudy Giuliani, and he found John Eastman, whose actions were a main focus yesterday. And how does this relate to the violent break-in at the Capitol and the fact that Mike Pence and members of Congress were in physical jeopardy as the rioters tried to obstruct the peaceful transfer of power for the first time in our nation's history? Well, Trump, of course, summoned his supporters to protest in Washington on January 6th, tweeting, "It will be wild." We knew that. And what we learned yesterday included at least two references to Attorney John Eastman on behalf of Trump, suggesting that violence was an acceptable tool in this quest. Eastman also acknowledged at one point in writing to Mike Pence's chief counsel that overturning the election would be illegal, would violate the Electoral Count Act, but Eastman was urging that Pence do it anyway. So here's a clip from yesterday of White House counsel Eric Hirschman, one of the many Trump advisors not to back the scheme, testifying about an exchange with lawyer John Eastman.
I said, "You're going to cause riots in the streets." And he said, "Worse to the effect of there's been violence in the history of our country, Eric, to protect the democracy or protect the republic."
Yeah, okay. There's been violence from time to time. So what? So that was one time when we heard about Eastman as he represented Trump being okay with violence. Here's another. This is Pence's chief counsel, Greg Jacob, in his life testimony, describing an exchange with Eastman about respecting the decisions of the courts in these cases. And you'll hear him talk about how it might be solved in the streets if not. This is about a minute and a half.
"You would have had just an unprecedented constitutional jump ball situation with that standoff. And as I expressed to him, that issue might well then have to be decided in the streets. Because if we can't work it out politically, we've already seen how charged up people are about this election. And so it would be a disastrous situation to be in." So I said, "I think the courts will intervene. I do not see a commitment in the Constitution of the question whether the vice president has that authority to some other actor to resolve. There's arguments about whether Congress and the vice president jointly have a constitutional commitment to generally decide electoral vote issues. I don't think that they have any authority to object or reject them. I don't see it in the 12th Amendment, but nonetheless." And I concluded by saying, "John, in light of everything that we've discussed, can't we just both agree that this is a terrible idea?" And he couldn't quite bring himself to say yes to that, but he very clearly said, "Well, yeah, I see we're not going to be able to persuade you to do this."
We're not going to be able to persuade you, meaning Vice President Pence, to do this, and shrugged off the idea that this would be resolved in the street. So I come back to my premise. We're learning from these hearings that January 6th was even worse than you probably thought. We'll play more excerpts as we go, and I'm delighted to have back with us Ilya Meretz, co-host of the podcasts Trump Inc. and Will Be Wild. He also reports on Trump legal affairs for NPR. For the record, he also started life after college as a Brian Lehrer Show producer way back when, before he became a rock star. Hi, Ilya. Welcome back to the show.
Brian, it's great to be with you.
And, you know, there really were blockbuster moments, weren't there?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. We knew, like, a little bit of the outlines of this story from press accounts and also from matters that had come up in the court for the past few years. But this is the first time that we had somebody very close to Vice President Pence, his counsel, Greg Jacob, narrating just what exactly it was like to work in the office of the vice president in the months of December 2020 and January 2021. And let me tell you, Vice President Pence was on the receiving end of just a very intense pressure campaign to get him to override his own better judgment about the law and about his powers as vice president and intervene to swing the election to Donald Trump and, you know, by extension to himself. He'd be giving himself a second term as vice president, but losing his self-respect and losing his moral compass along the way. So this was just, there was so much detail added to this. And I'm glad, Brian, that you played some of those clips at the top to do with violence, because it was the first time that we heard people, that we heard a view, that we gained an understanding of how people in Trump world saw the potential for civil disorder and what it might do if added to this extremely combustible mix.
Right. And there's a lot of speculation now about whether Eastman and Trump himself could be criminally charged in connection with the riot, not just intent to violate the Electoral Count Act, but because of their knowledge, at very least, of the possibility of violence from what they were encouraging. I saw the NBC legal commentator Chuck Rosenberg, no friend of Donald Trump, saying they haven't quite made a case yet at the level of proof for a criminal trial that Trump had the intent to incite the violence rather than just draw a rowdy crowd. You know, his Will Be Wild tweet doesn't say break in, doesn't say hurt anybody. Wild is a more general word. But while he pressured Pence and Congress politically not to certify the election, do you see anything more than that or think the committee will show us even more dots to connect in that respect?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the main character in there were three principal characters in yesterday's hearing, two of whom are very familiar, Mike Pence and Donald Trump, and one who was not so familiar, and that's John Eastman, this lawyer who was sort of like a late appearance in Trump world. You know, one of the consistent things that we saw while we were making Trump Inc. during the Trump administration was that people could just sort of, you know, waltz into Trump Tower and become kind of a fixture of his world. And it seems to have happened when Trump was in the White House as well. So this lawyer,
if they said things that he wanted to hear, right?
That was kind of the ticket. That's right, Brian. The way to get into his world is to say things that he wanted to hear. And that's what John Eastman was ready to do. So, you know, on the point that Chuck Rosenberg was making, Chuck Rosenberg is a well-qualified lawyer. I'm not. I do think that at this hearing, Donald Trump was not the principal character. The principal character really was John Eastman. Yeah. And the extraordinary pressure campaign that he waged on behalf of Donald Trump. One of the things that I think was that they raised that was harmful to Trump, or that would really sort of cause you to question his motives, that I didn't know before this hearing, is that President Trump's prepared remarks for when he was going to appear at the Stop the Steal rally at the Ellipse made no mention of Mike Pence. So when he talked at that rally about Mike Pence, as he did repeatedly, saying, you know, I hope Mike Pence is going to have courage, we hope he's going to do the right thing, that was ad-libbed. And I do think that that is significant, that whoever vetted his speech probably did not want a mention of Mike Pence in there. Yeah. But Donald Trump did want the crowd to be thinking about Mike Pence, a very amped up crowd.
I'm glad you brought that up, because to my eye, maybe the most damning bit of evidence yesterday regarding Trump himself along those lines was one of Trump's tweets on January 6th, which of course was public at the time, posted on Twitter, after 2 p.m. So the break-in is happening. The crowd feels the way they do about Mike Pence, thanks to Trump, and Trump tweets this. I'm reading the tweet. Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what should have been done to protect our country and our Constitution, giving states a chance to certify a corrected set of facts, not the fraudulent or inaccurate ones which they were asked to previously certify. USA demands the truth. So that's the tweet. And one witness described that as pouring gasoline on the fire because the crowd was already intense. They were hooked into Trump's Twitter feed, many of them, and an even fiercer surge began just after that. Now, as you say, you're not a lawyer, but I wonder if that's criminal, knowing the context of it.
It's certainly very interesting. I mean, we also heard witness testimony that that people had been getting urgent messages to Mark Meadows, the president's chief of staff, before the tweet, letting Meadows know that the violence was getting out of hand, you know, on the idea that Meadows is with the president or near the president at all time and therefore should be informing him that the Capitol is being overrun. So I do think it says something that a president who, let us posit that the president knew at the time that the Capitol was being overrun by a violent mob, and he still went ahead and sent that tweet. That is, that's really saying something. The committee also surfaced a photo that made such an interesting contrast of Mike Pence in his secure location reading that tweet on what looked like a BlackBerry. And the vice president just looks very still, very calm. It's kind of hard to read his expression. He's in profile. But when you think about the fact that the vice president was inside the Capitol that whole time for hours and hours, just 40 feet away from the rioters at the closest point, basically kind of locked away, digesting all of the incoming, including this hostile tweet from his own president, his own running mate.
Ilya Marritz with us from the podcasts Trump Inc. and Will Be Wild. Will Be Wild specifically about January 6th and following Trump legal issues for NPR. And so here's another moment from yesterday that demonstrates just how unconcerned about the law or about democracy Trump was. In this clip, it's a member of the committee, Congressman Pete Aguilar, describing an exchange between the president, I think on the morning of January 6th itself, and the vice president, in which the president kept trying to convince Pence to reject the electoral vote. This was originally reported, as the congressman said, in the book by Robert Costa and Bob Woodward.
In the book Peril, journalists Bob Woodward and Robert Costa write that the president says, quote, "If these people say you have the power, wouldn't you want to?" The vice president says, quote, "I wouldn't want any one person to have that authority." The president responds, "But wouldn't it almost be cool to have that power?"
Wouldn't it almost be cool, Ilya, to do this illegal, undemocratic thing so we can stay in power? I mean, that's how much, I'm just going to say it, that's how much of an autocratic sociopath Trump reveals himself to be in that reporting. Pence says no one person should have the power to reject the certified votes of the 50 states. And Trump says, yeah, but wouldn't it be kind of cool? Let's do it. Did that make even your eyes pop out a little bit like it did mine, even with everything we know about Trump's disregard for anything that's not in his interest?
Yeah, it's so interesting. You know, we spent many, many months putting together this podcast, Will Be Wild, and we tried to get a view of January 6th from all angles, and I think we largely succeeded, but the one place that was mostly closed to us was the White House itself, and we are starting to get a spectacularly detailed view of what was going on in and around the president. And yes, so my eyes did bug out when I heard that, and what I thought is, this is classic bullying. I mean, all you have to do is have, you know, attended school as a child, and you'll know that behavior pattern. There was some kid in your class who maybe said something like that to you at some point. There's another, I don't know whether it was the same day or the same hour, but there was another kind of video montage that the committee put together of a call between Pence and Trump on the morning of the 6th. And it's so interesting. Pence is in a meeting with his advisors. He steps out of the meeting and takes the call in private. So there's nobody privy to it on Pence's end. On Trump's end, he has his three eldest children, spouses and girlfriends, a variety of White House advisors. I don't know if he's doing this on speakerphone, but there seem to be, you know, about a dozen witnesses. And according to those witnesses, Trump calls him a wimp, and he calls him what they say, what they describe as the P word. So again, just classic bullying. You know, bullying isn't a crime, but it's not very dignified conduct.
Yeah.
And I think it illuminates the mindset. You know, at the beginning, you know, after Trump lost the election, there were many, many potential paths, I think, in the mind of Trump and his advisors to get there. But by the time we get to January 6th, really all their hopes were riding on changing the mind of the vice president about his own power to overturn the election. And so the attempts got more and more brazen and high pressure to convince him to do that.
So to another clip. Greg Jacob, the lawyer for Mike Pence, describing a moment really for the history books, or maybe for the movie version of January 6th, when somebody makes that, when the Secret Service gathers Pence and his entourage to evacuate them to safety from the Capitol, but Pence refuses to go.
When we got down to the secure location, Secret Service directed us to get into the cars, which I did. And then I noticed that the vice president had not. So I got out of the car that I had gotten into, and I understood that the vice president had refused to get into the car. The head of his Secret Service detail, Tim, had said, "I assure you, we're not going to drive out of the building without your permission." And the vice president had said something to the effect of, "Tim, I know you, I trust you, but you're not the one behind the wheel."
Tim, I trust you, but you're not the one behind the wheel. I'll play another clip, because there was one more attempt by Trump attorney John Eastman in a note to Pence lawyer, Greg Jacob, trying to get Pence to overturn the election even as the riot was going on. Here is Pence attorney Greg Jacob from yesterday's testimony again.
Later that evening, Mr. Eastman emailed me to point out that, in his view, the vice president's speech to the nation violated the Electoral Count Act, that the Electoral Count Act had been violated because the debate on Arizona had not been completed in 2 hours. Of course, it couldn't be, since there was an intervening riot of several hours. And that the speeches that the majority and minority leaders had been allowed to make also violated the Electoral Count Act because they hadn't been counted against the debate time. And then he implored me, now that we have established that the Electoral Count Act isn't so sacrosanct as you have made it out to be, I implore you one last time, can the Vice President please do what we've been asking him to do these last 2 days, suspend the joint session, send it back to the states.
Wow. And that, I slightly misspoke before the clip. I said that was even as the riot was going on, Eastman was trying to convince Pence's lawyer to get Pence to do that. It was really when the riot was over and Pence was back on the Senate floor getting ready to certify the election. Even the fact that the riot had happened and everything connected with the riot had happened and Pence was in danger and members of Congress were in danger, even after that, they were still trying to convince Pence not to certify the election. And it's also a bombshell, that one, because it's Eastman stating in writing, that blocking the transfer of power would have violated the Electoral Count Act, but let's do it anyway. Boom. And then we learned after that Eastman asked Rudy Giuliani to put Eastman on the pardons list for pardons that Trump might hand out just before he left office. So there was speculation yesterday that maybe that's why. So let's end for today like this. We know Pence is a very religious person. His political identity before this has been essentially as an evangelical conservative. And we learned yesterday his lawyer, Greg Jacob, who was really the star witness yesterday. Greg Jacob was the star of the show. We learned yesterday that he was religious too. Jacob testified to thumbing through his Bible on January 6th and keying on this particular verse.
My faith really sustained me through it. I, down in the secure location, pulled out my Bible, read through it, and just took great comfort. Daniel 6 was where I went, and in Daniel 6, Daniel has become the second in command of Babylon, a pagan nation, but he completely faithfully serves. He refuses an order from the king that he cannot follow, and he does his duty consistent with his oath to God. And I felt that that's what had played out that day.
And we will let that be the last word. Ilya Marritz, co-host of the podcast Trump Inc. and Will Be Wild. He also reports on Trump legal affairs for NPR. Thanks, Ilya.
Great to talk to you, Brian. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.